My fellow Americans, let me make this perfectly clear. If there is anyone in America who does not deserve a pardon, it's the man I'm about to introduce. Here comes the Colonel.
Yeah, right, guys. You can't fool me. That wasn't Richard Nixon, not really. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. At the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And we're going to get back to our guests on Lou of the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth and later Jonathan Kendall, Outreach for Columbia Southern University Online Learning. But first, we want to step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set for today's query. Run it around the coin jar here and drop the spirit of the fountain.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Oh, yes. The simple act of throwing in the coins awakens the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all. For a price. All right. Oh, spirit of the fountain. Here's today's query. The largest city in China is located at the mouth of the Yangtze River. Name this city. What is the largest city in China?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell me.
Yes, yes, yes. I know. That was way too easy. The largest city in China located at the mouth of the Yangtze River, of course. Shanghai. Everybody knows it's Shanghai. I know. We need to come up with more difficult questions on this program. All right, back to our show. Okay, we're back with our guest, Wang Lu, professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. In the previous half hour, we talked with her about how sad it is that public figures like Brian Williams and with his helicopter incident and Hillary Clinton ducking bullets in Bosnia, these untruths that came back to haunt them after a while. She pointed out that in the increasing society that we have, where it's hard to keep anonymity, and it's careful that we don't lie because they'll come back to haunt us. But I want to explore that a little further.
But we've often suspected it of happening in government all the time. We call it government propaganda, and we get misinformation from high on end. I know you've had to worry about that in your country, and we've had to worry about it in this country too. It seems to be pretty pervasive. Is this going to solve that too, or is the government going to have control then of all this information, and we're going to be fed and how to think, what to think, when to think, and all those sorts of things?
Back to the 1984 thing, right?
Yeah.
So now there's no government because the internet is a purely distributed system, and it has the tradition, technology distributed, and now the control distributed, information distributed, things distributed, people are distributed. So that's a connective community in the whole world, as I perceive, as the God. So in the different countries, different religions have a different opinions of the God. And we see that in majority of Chinese people, when they believe a Buddhist, or they're more influenced by Confucius. So with Confucius, he never talk about God, but he says there is some kind of divine. It's not a God. It's something. It's in the sky. That's the consciousness going to catch you. Give people the power to well behave, to behave themselves instead of being controlled behave. And there has to be some kind of fear. This fear not being imposed by the government or by the police. This fear is imposed by this technology, the internet. Expose everything, there's no privacy anymore.
Yeah, but I have to ask you, I mean, there are governments that are controlling what the people get through the internet. North Korea, we are told, is one of them, that the people are only given what the government wants to get through. There was the dramatic visage of the Arab Spring that we had a couple of years ago, where all of a sudden information was getting out faster than the government could control it, and so dictatorships toppled. And so there's others, like we find with Putin in Russia right now, who is trying very hard to control all the information. And there's a big backlash among many Russian people over what Vladimir Putin is doing to their information. Are these totalitarian rulers going to eventually win and be successful and be able to control the information? Or do you think that this is a juggernaut, that the internet and this interconnectivity that you're speaking about will eventually win out in everywhere, even the far corners of the world, like North Korea or Iran or some of the other countries where certain people want to control how we think?
That's right. What I see is that the more you want to control, the more you lose control. Because the control is not by the gun. Control is by the heart of people. So if you cannot convince the people by their heart, not just by their brain, not by their brain at all, it's by their heart, and eventually you bring down yourself. So that's what I see in the history, long history of Chinese, 5,000 years history, what happened to all those monarchies, dictatorships, and this is what happened. So the internet is a vehicle that will bring the democracy to everybody when it is ready. It's very important when I said democracy has come naturally from the people themselves, not being enforced, only when the people are ready to accept it.
Well, you had some pretty powerful things that you had sent me before the interview about personal identity information, such as your mother's maiden name and your birth date and your social security number, will be worth nothing to cyber criminals. And you said in 10 years. Are you predicting that?
Yes, I'm predicting that personal identity information, such as your mother's maiden name, your birth date, and your social security number, that was worth nothing to criminals in 10 years in the world. For the four various reasons. First of all, how many people are there in the world? And next is, what's the current rate of identity theft? By the rate of current identity theft, how they grow, the growth rate, and the population of people, pretty soon, or the personal, or vital, the basic personal identity, not the fingerprints, not your heartbeat, not those dynamics. The fixed ones, your mother's name, maiden name, your birth date, your social security number, they're all being known. And I know, for example, also your home phone number, by the way. And in the past time, the yellow book, right, they published all this phone number.
Yeah.
It's just been given away. So the will is dry out. I will tell those criminals, don't need to expend all your energy to try to dig out those personal information, identity. There's no use for you. One thing is, they're not anymore. The well is drying out. The second thing is because the ubiquitous surveillance and also the big data mining people's behavior, what their preference is, pretty soon they are going to be public. Once things are public, there's no reason to phishing them anymore. They're not public. They're not worth any money for you. And on the other hand, from our defending side, when we use our authentication, the end authentication technology, not based on this personal identity, as what you know, your mother's maiden name, your birthday, your social security number, but based on some other vital information, it cannot reproduce. And now, the personal identity is really no use for anybody.
Okay, and we're going to have to rely then on the scientists, the good scientists, let's say, not the ones that are controlled by a totalitarian regime, the good scientists, to come out with that personal key that we will carry with us, whether it's our fingerprint or our retina or our body odor or whatever else happens to be, and that is going to be our personal identification, and we're going to carry it right on us, and we've got to rely on you guys that are discovering all these things and researching all these things to come up with a solution, and you think it's going to happen at least within 10 years.
If we get the support, if we get awareness, and also especially get the mass, the power of the people that are willing to adopt this new method, and also the people who are not going to be under the victim of this identity fraud. For example, you heard of the Ramsey that encrypted your data, and you have to pay them to get your data back. I don't pay them. I find some other experts like us, the engineers, security engineers. We can decrypt for you, find out for you, but that takes a lot of time, of course, with the current method. But if we have this people's power, then we will get there. In a very possible time, that's why I said, in 10 years, this information are useless, but then we need some more time to make it reality that the whole world will be a beautiful world for everybody to live in.
Wow, you're talking kind of like a utopia, Dr. Liu. And that leads me to another question. You know, you've had mentors all your life. You've mentored other people. How about a creed to live by, a life lesson that maybe you want to pass on to our listeners right now?
Okay. The life lesson that I learned is the educator. That's what I, ever since I was, based on my memory, ever since I was known, I wanted to be an educator. So educator is a holy candle who bends herself to light others' way. So that's why the teachers, professors, and whoever teaches me become my father. When I say the father, this father is not just loving me, but also disciplining me to tell me what to do with the right thing. And maybe I like to have a cake every day, but cake is not good for me. So I have to eat those vegetables. And someone is a father's rule. And that father's rule is not for their own benefit. It's for the child's benefit. And you heard that in the Boston bomb. You heard how the parent said, I wish, let me die, let my child live. This is a universal. So educator is the father. It's a holy candle that bends itself to light others' way. Now don't try to make money as an educator, because once, as long as you're not starving, once people are starving, they kind of live immoral. As long as they're not starving, they live in not worried about the food on their mind. And then they will live, their mind will raise to the godly figure.
All right, Dr. Liu, that's some pretty profound stuff. And I love the picture that you painted of the utopian future where everybody is honest, everybody is good, and everybody helps everybody else out, because nobody wants to be exposed and nobody wants to be caught doing things that are underhanded. It's been an enormous pleasure having you on the program, Dr. Wang Liu, the professor of electrical and computer engineering, University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, and a presenter at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going on in the middle of April, the 14th through the 16th, in Boston, Massachusetts. More information on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link to the conference. All right, Dr. Liu, Professor Liu, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Tono. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Well, of all the exciting things that are going on with the Homeland Security Technologies Conference coming up in the middle of April, one of the highlights is going to be Columbia Southern University in Orange Beach, Alabama. And we're lucky to have a guest today, Jonathan Kendall. He's in charge of outreach for Columbia Southern U, and he's going to kind of fill us in on how this all fits into Homeland Security. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I understand you're probably going to want to talk at the conference about the new degree programs that you have, and we're real eager to get into that. But why don't we start out to giving us a little background on CSU and some of the programs and things that are generally offered. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, sure. Columbia Southern University was founded in 1993 by Dr. Robert Mays. We're 100% online. We are located in Orange Beach, Alabama. We currently have about 30,000 actively enrolled students. We are nationally accredited by the DEAC, which is the Distance Education Accrediting Commission.
Mm-hmm.
We are also an ACE member, which is the American Council on Education. Like I said, when the internet just, you know, first started coming, you know, really big, that's when, you know, we've been there ever since the beginning of it, pretty much.
So you decided to be entirely online. You don't have a campus or anything that, with all the expenses that go with it and all the Ivy and that sort of thing. So people that graduate from CSU do it by getting their credits online. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. Very flexible. You know, we're kind of centered more towards working professionals. You know, people who already have, you know, in their careers right now, you know, that want to advance and, you know, make it to where they can earn their degree with, you know, ease and not having to go to a classroom and such like that.
Well, that's pretty sensational. And you've really got your work cut out for you then, because you need to let people know that CSU is out there and the things that you're offering. So I guess there's a number of different ways you're doing it, and going to symposiums and conferences is one. What are some of the other ways that you get the message out about CSU?
We do learning partner visits. We travel around and, you know, go and visit some of our partners that we have partnerships with, and do presentations at different various police departments, fire stations, you know, municipalities. You know, basically that's what we do. That's what our outreach corporate people do, is we go out and travel around and tell people about CSU.
Well, you're a pretty busy guy. All right, let's talk about some of the new degree programs that you have. Homeland Security, Arson Investigation, ISS. Explain about ISS.
ISS is just, we just rolled it out about a month ago. It's we have a Bachelor of Science in Information Security Systems. It's basically about, you know, online security, you know, with all the cyber threats and everything going on today. And it's a very, very exciting new program, actually. Really, really excited about it.
I would have to say that, yes, information security systems has got to be vital because of the threats that are going on online all the time. We're always talking in this program about cyber warfare, cyber crime, and that sort of thing. So this is the new program that you just introduced. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the ISS program, it enhances the individual security skills through system analysis, you know, web development, networking, IT infrastructure, you know, cyber forensics, you know, homeland security. It's basically, like you said, with the way our generation's heading, is everything's going to online, you know, and it just basically prepares people for an ISS, for them to go into the workplace and, you know, protect against it. And
I would imagine online is the real way to teach it, because you can actually have people hands-on while you're there online. And this is a degree program. How long does it take to get the degree with an ISS?
Well, like, it's a bachelor. So it's a Bachelor of Science. So it's 120 credit hours to complete this degree program.
120 hours, and the people work at their own pace. So some will be farther down the road than others. Is that right?
Yes, sir, most definitely. That's why we also have two different type paces you can do. You can do an 8-week course, or you can also go, we have one called a life-paced learning course, which is 10 weeks, and they work at their own pace. You have no deadlines, no anything. You have 10 weeks to complete. You get all your assignments, and you have 10 weeks to complete it.
That's an incredibly exciting thing. I would imagine that you've got a whole lot of interest in that degree programs for ISS, and I would hope that you would, because it is absolutely a very burning issue right at the moment. Now, you also mentioned Homeland Security, so there's more than just ISS with Homeland Security. What are the other things that you're doing?
Yeah, we also just rolled out a BS degree in Homeland Security, which is you know, kind of a CJ administration with a concentration in Homeland Security. We have several different ways of doing that, but that's also one that we're looking forward to pushing out and talk to people about.
So an actual degree in Homeland Security. Now then, what is that cover? Can you give us a little in-depth view of that if someone in our audience was interested in a degree in Homeland Security?
Yeah. I mean, it falls in part to like our CJ degree, you know. It's just a little bit more concentrated on the homeland security aspect of it, you know.
Okay.
So to speak.
Yeah, okay, fine. And arson investigation, I see that's another degree program that you have there. And this is actually a forensic investigating of arson after it happens, or is this the prevention of arson?
Yeah, it's after it happens, it's arson investigation. It's a new one that we're also really excited about. We're very big also into with the fire departments and stuff. It's one of our big student body part is we do a lot with fire departments, and it was something that some of my coworkers have been working to get rolled out for a very good while, and very excited about it. We've already had a lot of interest in it. Matter of fact, I went and visited a learning partner yesterday and a chief of police, and he was actually had been wanting to pursue a degree in that and was very excited, and I was able to talk to him about it and kind of give him some information. So we've had a lot of activity in that so far.
So it's not just fire departments that are interested in the arson investigation, but police officers too want to add that to their list of tools. That makes a lot of sense. So tell us a little bit more about what makes CSU unique.
Well, like I said, we're extremely affordable. We have a really low cost tuition right now. It's $210 per hour, per credit hour. Most of our classes are three-hour classes. All of our textbooks are provided for you for a complimentary through the CSU book grant.
Yeah.
We are a Title IV entity, which means we have financial aid available, tuition assistance.
Oh, great.
VA benefits.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier about the two types of enrollment are, the term and life pace, which one is 8 and the life pace is 10 weeks.
Okay.
With it being 100% online, you can study anywhere, anytime. We have no entrance exams required.
All right.
You remain an active student as long as you enroll in at least one class a year.
Okay.
We also evaluation. We have a complimentary evaluation. We will evaluate all your prior college, military transcripts, and all of your previous training certificates, and we'll consider that for transfer credit. You can transfer up to 75% of an undergraduate degree and 50% of a graduate degree.
All right. With all the demand out there for these sorts of jobs, I imagine people get the degrees and leave your classes and able to go right out into the workplace and put it all to good use.
Exactly.
Now, you have some learning partnerships, too, and I noticed that, you made note of that here, and I wanted to ask you about that. What are these learning partnerships that you talk about?
Well, currently we have a little over 2,200 partnerships right now. We partner with universities, businesses, municipalities, fire departments, police departments, and basically what it is, you can kind of list it in their benefit packages. We give them a 10% tuition discount, and it also not only goes for the employees but for the employees' family, say, spouse or children, and they also get that. They also have exclusive scholarship opportunities, and they also are eligible for the free textbooks underneath, or the complimentary textbooks under the CSU book grant.
Okay. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us. We really enjoyed having you.
Thank you, Colonel. Thank you for having me on here.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
One of the things that I believe is there's always opportunity and change. Change is scary, it can be difficult, but there's always opportunity. Anytime you get change, there's an opportunity to make things better. That's something I try and live by, something I try and tell my staff. There's always opportunity and change. Paul Benda, I am the director of the Homeland Security Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is part of DHS's Science and Technology Directorate.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.